All right. Okay, let's go. So I want to make the case for non-blocking code reviews as opposed to the classic commonly accepted pull request model. Just to be clear, I don't question the pull request model in the open source world. It has value for the open source world because it solves a trust issue. I do question it in the corporate environment, where I think it has no value at all. Anyway, so back in 2012, quite a long time ago, so it's only recently I started speaking about this, I had the opportunity to start a coaching mission to upscale the engineering skills of a rather novice team. Luckily, I wasn't alone doing that. We were two coaches, was my friend Martin van Aken and myself, which makes things more easy. And so when we arrived, we discovered a situation we didn't quite expect to still discover in 2012. No version control was in place. Yeah. So first thing we did was introduce version control systems. Well, and I thought like, yeah, well, Git is maybe a bit a bridge too far for a team that never used any version control system. Well, the whole idea of having a remote repo, a local repo, when you commit it's not in the remote repo, was like mind-blowing. So I suggested we'll go for Subversion. And because it was said that while branching in Subversion is difficult, complicated, I also suggested we use no branches at all. Everyone is going to commit straight into the into mainline, well, trunk for Subversion. And that went pretty well because, well, it was the second thing we introduced right from the start, and that was the practice of continuous integration together with team commitment that any change had to be covered by an automated test, preferably a unit test. Now, because the team was novice, well, we wanted to have some mentoring in place. And pair programming was difficult. The team was not particularly open to the idea, although we did some pairing from a coaching perspective, but it wasn't part of the team culture. So the next best thing was, well, code reviews. And back then, I was a fervent believer of code reviews, mainly influenced by books like Code Complete, Facts and Fallacies of Software Engineering, and the writings of Joe Ospolsky. Anyone remembers Joe Ospolsky? Yay! Well, it says something about our age, but anyway. And because the team was novice, we also decided every single commit had to be reviewed. And so because there were no branches in place, well, we ended up doing non-blocking code reviews, which was, well, the realization of implementing lean principles and keeping things simple, stupid. Not really realizing that what we were doing was actually a performant way of running code reviews. And in all honesty, I was quite embarrassed by our way of working compared to the rest of the industry. So we were nowhere close to what the rest of the industry was doing at that time, using branches and code reviews and pull requests and blah, blah, blah. Now, those non-blocking code reviews were based on two key ideas. And the first key idea was to establish a continuous review process that consists of regular reviews as part of the development process. So the team used a Kanban board to track work. And every ticket on the board was a feature, not a task. And so if you want to move tickets quickly from left to right, well, it puts pressure to keep those features small. So the feature was a unit of work on the Kanban board, but the feature was not the unit of integration, as it happens with feature branching. So the unit of integration was a commit. And the unit of release and deployment into production was a commit or a series of commits. Because decision to deploy into production was still a manual decision, we practiced continuous delivery and not continuous deployment. Now, to ensure that code reviews happened and to track the code reviews, we introduced a to review column, which indicates this feature is ready to be reviewed. So it's code complete, ready to be reviewed. Now, Dave Farley has seen this before, but it never really worked out for the teams that Dave worked with because it was always seen as a gate. And research is clear about process gates. It's so going slow for safety is a bad idea because it introduces lots of disorders and dysfunctions, and it drives down quality. But in our case, it was different. This was not a gate. So the feature growed commit by commit on mainline, but reviews were happening on the whole feature on mainline. Now, to avoid any context switching for the team, well, we decided that whenever someone finished work before starting new work, or at the start of the day, or at the start of the afternoon, well, they would first check the to review column to see if nothing was waiting to be reviewed. And if something was waiting to be reviewed, well, they would review it. There was only a single rule in place. That was, no one was allowed to review a feature they were involved in writing. It had always to be reviewed by another engineer. There were no rules in place regarding who could review the code of who. There was no hierarchy in place. There was true peer reviews. And so we had seniors reviewing the code of seniors and reviewing the code of juniors, as one would expect. But we also had juniors reviewing the code of other juniors and of seniors. Now, I wasn't expecting that those juniors would provide many commands, but I was hoping that, well, by reading the code of more experienced engineers, they would learn something. Although I have seen quite some interesting reviews coming from juniors because they ask different questions. They ask more outsider questions, the why questions, so the necessary triggers for improvement. Well, if we don't practice pull request or we don't practice pair programming, well, we end up in a situation where unreviewed code is going straight into the remote mainline. And so we end up with having reviewed code and unreviewed code sitting alongside each other on mainline. And so we have this piece of code is releasable and this piece of code is not releasable at the same time. How do we keep them apart? And what does releasable even mean in that situation? And that is the second key idea behind the non-blocking code reviews. Stop the code review to be definitive for the release. So the code review doesn't define if a code base is releasable anymore. It is not a gate anymore. It is not a go, no-go decision anymore. So the team practiced true continuous integration with string-based development that later evolved towards continuous delivery with a deployment pipeline. And every commit that went successfully through the whole deployment pipeline, through every stage of the deployment pipeline, and that have been thoroughly tested, had the potential to arrive into production. So the Kanban board was working on the level of the feature, and reviews were working on the level of the features, but the software grew small commit by small commit on mainline, and every commit could end in production. So this means that unreviewed code could end up in production, whether the feature was finished or not, whether the feature was reviewed or not. So we can argue, yeah, but we are running the risk of having bad code quality in production. And yes, that is true, and that happened many, many times. And that is not a problem, because bad quality is not a bug. Code reviews are not there to catch bugs. Anyone who thinks that a code review will catch a bug, well, believes in fairy tales. It doesn't work like that. For catching bugs, we have automated tests and we have exploratory testing. So we had team commitment that any change had to be covered by an automated test, preferably a unit test. On top of that, we had a decent set of what we call automated acceptance tests, what people usually call end-to-end tests. Although in our case, we were not end-to-end, but anyway. Then we also had a system in place that I would call peer testing. So we didn't have test engineers in the team, unfortunately. So the best thing we came up was that, well, any feature that was implemented had to be tested by another engineer not involved in implementing the feature, like performing exploratory testing. And on top of that, we had a decent set of static code analyzers that would break the build on any rule violation. So the risk of working like that is not that, well, the code will be buggier or not, but that we might deliver lower quality code into production. But low quality code does not impact product delivery and even less functionality. On the other hand, low quality code does impact the speed of change. So it will impact how quickly we can implement new functionality and introduce new changes, and so it will impact our time to market. And that's the reason why we want to have high code quality. This is not working. So in the end, this is code that works because the tests say so. It passed all the tests. But that could be better. But that is somehow always true. So code reviews will only reduce the chances of low code quality, but it will not, and that will mostly depend on the quality of the code review, but it will not eliminate bad code quality altogether. Now, this worked for this team because, well, the team decided that every single commit had to be reviewed at some point in time. And whenever an issue was raised, it had to be handled with the highest priority. Like, we dropped work to fix the issue so that the issue was removed as quickly as possible. Now, the benefits. Now, in order to understand the benefits, we need to understand the concept of transaction cost from lean manufacturing. So transaction cost is the cost of moving a batch of work from one stage to another stage. It's important to understand this because, well, the higher the transaction cost is, the more inventory is created in front of the next stage. So let's say we want to order some goods online, and the transaction cost, so the cost to deliver the goods, is €3. Well, in that case, we will not order a single good of €1. No. We are going to order a multiple of goods so that we end up with a total cost that is a multiple of the transaction cost to compensate the transaction cost. So if it takes 10 minutes to create a change and the change is waiting for a code review, and it takes 2 hours to receive a code review, it means that the change was waiting for 92% of the total lead time. Now, this is a pretty expensive process, isn't it? So it signals us that code reviews are costly. And so, in order to compensate the transaction cost of the code review, well, we are incentivized to ask less often for code reviews. And so what happens when we ask less often for code reviews? Well, we are going to create more changes before asking for the code review. And so it discourages us to work in small incremental steps, and it discourages us to perform refactoring. And if we don't refactor, we are not paying back technical debt, and if we are not paying back technical debt, it is going to impact the speed of change, and so introducing new functionality will take longer. Now, because we are waiting for someone to be available in order to do the code review, we are also incentivized to create more work in progress because, well, people want to feel productive. They are not just going to wait there until someone is available for a code review and do nothing. So what will they do? Right, they will start new work. And there we have the start of context switching and multitasking, and we know where this goes, and it's not pretty. Now, because of Little's law, the more work in progress we have, well, the longer the lead times become, and so the more time it takes to get something onto the market. And so we end up with delayed delivery, delayed feedback, learning will decelerate, we become risk averse, innovation falls flat, and we go back to conservative solutions. And this is what happens with organizations that practice pull requests. They go back to conservative ways of working. So to get things out sooner, well, we need to reduce the transaction cost. And so we need to reduce the cost of the code review. So the benefits, second time. So in our case, the transaction cost was nearly zero. It had no impact at all on the total lead time. Commits already went through the deployment pipeline, and when it was successful, it could already be in production even before a code review happened. And so there was no reason for us to create more changes before asking for a code review. So we could work in small incremental steps, and refactoring happened naturally, and so we ended up with better code quality. Now, the fact that unreviewed code could already be tested and could already be in production before a code review even happened was surprisingly a significant benefit, because now we already received feedback from testing and we already received feedback from production from how the user used the feature or does not use the feature before we started the code review. Eventually, we didn't even have to start the code review if the feature was not used in production. We should have eradicated the feature. Now, because we never have to wait for someone to be available, well, we can work on functionality in one go from start to end. So we can focus on one single thing. We never start new work before finishing any ongoing work. And so we have no multitasking anymore. And therefore, we also have way less work in progress. And because of Liddell's law, well, we have a reduced lead time, a reduced time to market. Now, sometimes it happened that during a code review, well, we discovered that the design was completely off, like completely wrong. These were the times where I was like, I wished we did some pair programming to avoid this situation. But then again, it wasn't a big deal because, well, the test said the functionality worked. It was already in production, delivering value to our users. The users were already using it. So we had all the time to redo the design and do a thorough rewrite. And we could even use the feedback from production to incorporate it in the rewrite. Something that is very difficult with pull requests. With pull requests, we have two options when the design is off. Either we impose a fix, and during the time we fix it, well, the feature is still blocked. We still have no feedback on whether this thing that we just implemented is the right thing. We could even be wrong, but we don't know it. Or, well, there is delivery pressure, and so we cut corners, and we let it go, and we say, we'll fix it later. And later never happens. Right, so in our case, no pressure, no stress, no fatigue, no burnout. Now, because unreviewed commits go straight into the remote mainline and eventually arrive into production, it puts a lot of trust on the team. So we are expecting the team to do the right thing instead of thinking that the team is stupid and we need a process to fix for that. No, we were expecting the team to write automated tests, that they were going to write the right automated tests, and that they would write high quality automated tests and enough automated tests. So this is applying management theory Y over management theory X. And then again, well, if something wrong happens in production, that's also not the end of the world, as long as we have a process that allows us to fix it quickly. And in our case, we could release in less than an hour. Now, to be honest, well, there is a caveat with non-blocking code reviews. It might be difficult to introduce in regulated industries, especially healthcare, where they require a gate in the form of a code review before going to production. Although I can imagine ways of introducing it, but I never worked in healthcare, so I never tested the idea, so I won't share it right now. On the other hand, there are better ways to achieve the same, and this is pair programming and team programming. So with pair programming, the pair can sign off the commit, and this is the review, at the moment of committing, and they can tag the change with the identifier of the engineers involved in the pair. And this is your evidence that a code review happened. Now, I still think that pair programming and team programming are a superior delivery option. But in many organizations, this is a cultural stretch to introduce. It's just difficult. People are not open to the idea, the whole social aspect that is involved. So in those cases, non-blocking review strategies are significantly better than any of the alternatives because we have no gates in place. And because there are no gates, we have no delays. So deliveries are never blocked. We have shorter times to market. Because we have no waiting times, well, people are not incentivized to start new work before finishing ongoing work, and so we have way less work in progress. And because of Little's law, our lead times are reduced and our times to market are reduced. Because we are not starting new work before finishing ongoing work, well, we have less context switching. So we have no productivity curves, no multitasking anymore, way less stress and fatigue and burnout. Also, when we find issues in code reviews, well, we have all the time to fix them. There is no pressure to fix because there is no delivery pressure. It's already delivered. It's already in production, delivering value. And lastly, well, we are not incentivized to work in bigger batches, so we can work in small incremental steps, and refactoring happens naturally, so leading to way better code quality, which allows us to improve the speed of change and, again, reduce lead time and time to market. Thank you.
Yeah. How do you see it on this when we have agents creating all the code?
Can you repeat? Yeah, well, I still think you need to review the code because you need to understand what the AI agent generated.
And who would do that?
Well, people. Yeah, otherwise you have an asset where you don't understand what happened, and this is a huge risk. Yeah, so, good point. So what is, so I mentioned it requires trust in the team, and if I understood the question right, you are asking what all the things are needed for this to work, and can this work in any team? Now we were lucky with this team, they were really demanding. And they saw us like, oh, they are going to tell us what's the right thing to do. So this is helpful. It's a bit more difficult when you have, like, in very senior environments that always worked with pull requests to just introduce that. Because a lot is in the minds of, yeah, but, well, first, we have always worked like that. And second, yeah, but trust, that's all good. But in the end, I think it's that's a long work process. It's a lot of massage, I think.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very quick.
If you have
last question,
you make a change, but it turns out you need to make quite a lot of changes all over the code. So your commit isn't really very small, and it starts becoming big. And then most of the tests pass, but you also have to support 10 different platforms, lots of hardware configurations, lots of support libraries, and not all the tests pass on all the platforms. Is there any way you can still move forward if you can't guarantee that you can fix every platform, every support thing all the time immediately? Can you still use this workflow?
Yes. So, yeah. So, repeat the question.
Like you have a it's allowed for release on these platforms, but not on these platforms, maybe, because the testing says that.
So
I'm going to fix everything right now because I want to move forward on something else which still needs tweaking. And
so, yeah, so what... So what if we don't have a single commit but multiple commits, and we need to do loads of changes everywhere in the code base, but we are deploying in many on many different platforms, target platforms? So I would suspect, yeah, I don't know actually. Well, the thing is, so this requires a deployment pipeline that acts as a gate. So if tests are failing, it just don't go to production, period. And so the team implements stop the line, and that means they drop work and fix the deployment pipeline because, well, it means we are not delivering value. Yeah.
I think let's leave it at this. Thank you very much.